on tonight's show, we have a continuation of the movie review of The Matrix Reloaded, which is the second of the Matrix films, star Keanu Reeves. Hopefully we have been able to listen to the first part, and we have Christian back to explain the second half of the movie. It's loaded with so much information that it had to be over two parts. So I've got Christian here on standby, and we're just going to play, repeat the part, last part that he went through last session, where the Oracle is having a conversation with Neo about the future and helping him understand what's going on.
You have the sight now, Neo. You are looking at the world without time.
Then why can't I see what happens to her?
We can never see past the choices we don't understand.
Are you saying I have to choose whether Trinity lives or dies?
No. We've already made the choice. Now you have to understand it.
So here the Oracle explaining not just free choice or free will, but to understand what underlies free choice, the reason behind it. Which is much, much, much more powerful. So in Gnosis, we wish for virtues, to truly know virtues like love and compassion, forgiveness, sacrifice, and to have them continuously being within us. And as the Gnosis, we need to understand choice and then the reason behind it. So she continues on.
No, I can't do that. I won't.
Well, you have to.
Why?
Because you're the one.
What if I can't? What happens if I fail?
Then Zion will fall. Our time is up. Listen to me, Neo. You can save Zion if you reach the source, but to do that, you will need the Keymaker.
The Keymaker?
Yes, he disappeared some time ago. We did not know what happened to him until now. He's being held prisoner by a very dangerous program. One of the oldest of us. He is called the Merovingian, and he will not let him go willingly.
What does he want?
What do all men with power want? More power.
So the Oracle gives Neo purpose and the means to do it. He needs to go to the source to save humanity. She's also told Neo that he has to choose between Trinity dying and the genocide of humanity. So once again, we have another massive choice for Neo to reconcile within himself. He has the love of his life, Trinity, who is going to die and who he must save. But he will do that at the expense of Zion, that all of humanity will die. So he's left with a huge choice there. So it's a huge aspect that he has to overcome, and he has to understand the reason behind it. And so the Oracle and Seraph leave, and Neo is there, and Agent Smith arrives. And we find that he believes that he's not completely controlled by his programming now, that the Agent Smith believes himself to be something more. And he says, as Hugo Weaving does, a really fantastic piece of monologue.
But, as you well know, appearances can be deceiving, which brings me back to the reason why we're here. We're not here because we're free. We're here because we're not free. There's no escaping reason, no denying purpose, because as we both know, without purpose, we would not exist.
It is purpose that created us. Purpose that connects us. Purpose that pulls us, that guides us, that drives us. It is purpose that defines. Purpose that binds us.
We are here because of you, Mr. Anderson. We're here to take from you what you tried to take from us. Purpose.
So it's very interesting. So the Oracle has given Neo a purpose to return to the source. And Agent Smith feels like he now has no purpose, that Neo has taken that purpose away from him. So he's even more angry about things. So there's a whole fight that goes on. Neo has to beat up a whole heap of Smiths. There's maybe 100 of them after a while. And once again, he sees the futility of the fight and flies off. So it's interesting because the agent believes himself to be free. He talks about that in his monologue, but really he isn't. He's not necessarily a part of the system, but he is still a slave to his pattern of thinking, his mechanical nature, because all he really wants to do is kill Neo. There's nothing else in his life. So that's really his purpose, we could say. He doesn't even sort of realize that he thinks that that's going to get somewhere. And he doesn't realize that his purpose could be the same as Neo's. So his purpose could be to return to the source as well, but he doesn't want to do that. So we have that very strong duality between them once again. The Oracle sends Neo on a task, on a mission, so to speak, and that's to get the Keymaker. And he has to go through someone, an older program, as we've said, called the Merovingian. So Neo, Trinity, and Morpheus go and visit this Merovingian. And the Merovingian is in his own restaurant. We assume it's his restaurant called, I don't know how to say, pronounce this in French, La Vraie, which is French for the truth. And it's a very sophisticated restaurant, a very upmarket, you know, very beautiful restaurant where everyone's very quiet and the waiters are all French. And as they come into the restaurant, Neo sees a character which will be in the next film in Matrix Revolutions, which is a character by the name of Ramachandra. And they sit down and they talk to the Merovingian. And the Merovingian, as we said, is played by Lambert Wilson, and Persephone is played by Monica Bellucci. And it's interesting because when they sit down, we feel that Neo and Trinity are with Morpheus, who is their being. However, we see that the Merovingian and Persephone are not with their being, but they're with all the other dodgy aspects of themselves. So there's the twins and all these other henchmen behind them, which represent something in the Kabbalah called the four bodies of sin. And so the Merovingian, as we said, is a very pompous, arrogant man who knows only his level or his dimension, and he doesn't know anything else. And he's the king, but he doesn't realize he's the king of only one area, not of everything. And so he starts the conversation.
The question is, do you know why you are here?
We are looking for the Keymaker.
Oh, yes, it is true. The Keymaker, of course. But this is not a reason, this is not a why. The Keymaker himself is very nature, is a means, it is not an end. And so, to look for him is to be looking for a means to do what?
You know the answer to that question.
But do you? You think you do, but you do not. You are here because you were sent here. You were told to come here, and then you obeyed. It is, of course, the way of all things.
So we begin to see that the Merovingian is powerful because he knows why. He knows the end. He has the means, but he knows the end. He wants to know why they seek the Keymaker. And the Merovingian thinks that they are obeying. However, it's really a high level, a high vibration of faith that Neo, Trinity, and Morpheus have faith in how things are going to work out. They don't need to know. They're just happy going along the path, so to speak, working through it as it comes. And in contrast to that, the Merovingian cannot see outside his own way of thinking. So he has to see a beginning and an end. He can't sort of, he only deals in the known, so to speak, while they are working in the unknown. And so we get to the crux of the nature of his world in the following part of the conversation.
You see, there is only one constant, one universal. It is the only real truth, causality. Action, reaction. Cause and effect.
Everything begins with choice.
No, wrong.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
So the Merovingian is not something in Gnosis or in that we call the law, but which govern cause and effect and karma. But however, he knows these processes very well. The Merovingian understands action, reaction, cause and effect and karma. Come to some extent, he would. So he has not overcome them. He understands cause and effect. He understands action and reaction. He understands karma, but he doesn't know how to overcome them. He doesn't know them intimately. However, because he knows them quite well, he can manipulate cause and effect. And he can manipulate them to become very powerful, which he is a very powerful man. He manipulates them for his own benefit. So he goes on to demonstrate this power, that he has knowledge of cause and effect in the matrix. We see he does not care for the choice or free will of others, and he only cares about himself, about his power, about control, about manipulating people. And even if he looks sophisticated, really he's not sophisticated. He's a very low-level kind of guy. So he sends out a dessert to a woman who has a sexual experience because of the cause and effect, and this is what he says.
Each line of the program creating a new effect, just like poetry. First, a rush, heat, her heart flutters. You can see it now, yes? She does not understand why. Is it the wine? No. What is it then? What is the reason? And soon it does not matter. Soon the why and the reason are gone. And all that matters is the feeling itself. And this is the nature of the universe. We struggle against it. We fight to deny it. But it is, of course, pretends it is a lie. Beneath our poised appearance, the truth is we are completely out of control.
So the Merovingian sees life as being completely out of control. And I really love his acting in that. He just has a way about his face and the way that he delivers that whole monologue. And the actor, Lambert Wilson, he's just awesome. So one of the interesting aspects is that the Merovingian is fundamentally wrong about control. So there is no doubt that we are out of control if we have the ego active and present within ourselves. No doubt about that. However, if the ego is gone, if the ego is dissolved and we have consciousness, and we have these virtues, then we gain power and control back. So people with ego are possible to control because the ego is like a program with a certain instructions that are carried out. But when the consciousness takes its place, it is completely autonomous and cannot be manipulated because it knows all. And so as we see, the Merovingian uses the knowledge of cause and effect to gain power very easily and very well. There's something as simple as a dessert can spark a sexual experience in someone. So he's very, very powerful that he can even manipulate people on a sexual level. And so he goes on to talk about causality.
Causality. There is no escape from it. We are forever slaves to it. Our only hope, our only peace is to understand it, to understand the why. Why is what separates us from them. You. From me. Why is the only real source of power? Without it, you are powerless. And this is how you come to me. Without why, without power. Another link in the chain.
So we see the arrogance of the Merovingian who sees Neo in a very low way. So it's interesting because Neo has to go beyond this cause and effect, action and reaction, the karma. And we have to pay back karma on the path. That's the main aspect of it. So the Merovingian doesn't see that he's actually a slave to causality, to cause and effect. and supposedly cannot do anything about it. But this is where he is wrong. He cannot see beyond his own dimensions, so he lives in that causal world, that causality. However, it is possible to go beyond it. One of the aspects of the path is that we have to go beyond that. So the Merovingian tells Neo that there is no choice, but he is wrong. And so basically the conversation ends and he's going to the toilet and the Merovingian politely asks them to leave and they leave. In the next scene, the three of them, Neo, Trinity and Morpheus, are in the lift on the way down. And they're trying to work out what went wrong. They didn't get the Keymaker. They didn't get what they were coming for. You know, what's going on with the Oracle, all these sorts of things. And as they do that, they come back up to the top floor. I think it was 101 that the restaurant is on. And the Merovingian's wife, Persephone, is there. And they open the door and she asks if they want the Keymaker. So things went as they were meant to go. So she gives them a very, very basic deal. And there's a lot of, you know, tense scenes in the Matrix in the all three of them. And this one I feel is quite a tense scene in a very different way. So let's listen to what Persephone wants for the Keymaker.
I'll give you what you want, but you have to give me something.
What?
A kiss. Excuse me. I want you to kiss me as if you were kissing her.
Why?
You love her. She loves you. It's all over you both. A long time ago, I knew what that felt like. I want to remember it. I want to sample it. That's all. Just a sample.
So Trinity isn't overly happy with these turn of events, and she says,
why don't you sample this instead?
Trinity.
I had to put that in because she draws our gun out. So we understand that this is now the third couple, the couple without love. So we have the Merovingian and Persephone, who are a couple who have lost love. Persephone wants to sample real love again through Neo, that she has lost with the Merovingian. And she talks about sampling. Like, she can't have it. It can't be a continuous thing. She can only have a small bit of it. She has to sample it. And then later on in the film, in the next couple of scenes, we find out that at the same time, the Merovingian has been with the woman who he gave the dessert to in the toilet. And so there are a couple who aren't together anymore, who are very separate and just, you know, have external affairs, we could say, and other things like that. So Neo agrees to kiss Persephone, who, as we said, is the queen of the underworld. And he does it for the first time, but she's not really impressed. She doesn't really feel like he's put that love into it, that he hasn't kissed her like he would kiss Trinity. And then the second time, she's happy and she feels that type of love that she longs for. And she hands over the Keymaker. So Persephone also allows a henchman, or one of his henchmen, to tell the Merovingian. And they come back and she tells everyone he has been with that woman in the toilet. And so there's a huge fight that goes on now, because the Merovingian wants to keep the Keymaker because he's very powerful for him. And Neo needs the Keymaker to find the source. And so, as we said, there's a huge fight that ensues. There's these ghost-like twins who are really awesome, who I thought should have got more time in the film because they're just fantastic. There's a massive car chase scene. And eventually, Neo saves Morpheus and the Keymaker from a double exploding semi-trailer. So it's quite a spectacular scene, and, you know, heavy action scene. And Neo saves the day. So now they have the Keymaker, so they have the means, so to speak. So the next scene, the Keymaker tells Neo that in order to get to the source, there is a building with a special door he has to go through. And this building is very secure, and they need help from all the other ships. It's almost like an episode of Mission Impossible. Everyone's got their mission that they have to do, and they have to fulfill it, and if one person stuffs up, then it's not so good. And The Keymaker says that there's a window of opportunity for Neo to make it through the special door, and that number is 314 seconds. And so we'll know from our year five maths that this reminds us of the number of pi, which is the constant to calculate the circumference of a circle. So pi is 3.14 and a whole heap of other digits after that. So the circle reminds us of the wheel of samsara. So with the path, we look to go beyond the wheel of samsara. The wheel of samsara is cause and effect, action and reaction. And the path itself, we actually go beyond that and create circumstances for ourselves, it said. So the Keymaker tells them how they're going to go about it.
How do you know all this?
I know because I must know. It is my purpose. It is the reason I'm here. The same reason we're all here.
So that's an interesting aspect from the Keymaker, because the Keymaker, the mission or the purpose of the Keymaker is to get Neo to the source. So he's lived for hundreds of years or whatever. We don't know how long. We know that he's an old program, but he understands that his purpose in life is to get Neo to the source. And that's the reason he knows this information, so he can help Neo. And so we understand that a lot of people are helping Neo. But Neo actually needs help. He can't do this work by himself. He has Trinity, he has Morpheus, and all these other people helping him. So it's an interesting aspect of the path. So in the next scene, Neo and Trinity are chatting together and they're talking. And Neo asks Trinity to stay out of this mission to go to the source. And she asks her to stay out of the Matrix for this mission, and she agrees. And we begin to realize that he believes that the dream that he had is about to come true, that she's about to die, that he's seen the prophetic dream, and then he's talked to the oracle. He says that he has to save her or Zion. And so we understand that she may die, and so he's decided to keep her out of the Matrix so she can be alive. And so all three crews except Trinity go into the Matrix, and they have to perform all these tasks to do with the building and shutting off the electricity. And quite quickly, the crew of the Vigilant are killed back in reality through a Sentinel. And so the whole plan just goes badly. And they need someone. They're pretty much going to get found out pretty quickly, and they're going to get caught. And so Trinity decides to help them and go into the Matrix. And so Trinity goes in there, and that's when we see everything pretty much from the first scene, where the motorcycle goes into the security guards, and then she goes in there and then beats up the security guards. She goes into the facility. And if we remember from the first film, she's a hacker. She's a program hacker. So she hacks through the mainframe and gets everything sorted out, and allows Neo and Morpheus and the Keymaker to make it to the corridor, to those back doors, because we need to get to the back doors to get to the source. Unfortunately, Agent Smith is waiting for them in the corridors, and it's a very claustrophobic fight that ensues. But eventually, Neo and Morpheus and the Keymaker make it out of the corridor into a door, and Neo does that by grabbing Morpheus and flying into a new room where the Keymaker is. And the agents shoot at them, and unfortunately the Keymaker gets it, and Neo and Morpheus are fine. But as he's dying, the Keymaker instructs them both on what door they need to take. So finally, we believe that we're going to the source. However, we're going to this new character, the Architect. So a very, very interesting time. So first off, it's very interesting because Neo unlocks the door with the key that he's been given by the Keymaker, but he actually doesn't walk through this door. The door sort of open. The door doesn't open, but the room itself forms light around him. So it's almost like he's always been in this particular area, but he hasn't really realized it. that this room has a ubiquitous quality to it, like it's everywhere. And so Neo is now in this white room, and we see that there's many televisions on the wall. And these televisions represent the inner thoughts and feelings that Neo has, his memories, all these sorts of things. And so, as we said, the architect who's sitting down is an archon who relates to the demiurge architect, or the Elohim, the creator gods, the god who creates the matrix. However, he doesn't know that there's a god beyond him, which is even more powerful, outside of the matrix. And in the Pistosphere, this god is known as Agnostos Theos. And this Agnostos Theos, which is relates to the source in the matrix, has the force to be able to get someone to take the path back to them. So even the architect doesn't realize that, because he's the top guy or the top god or the top angel in creation, but he doesn't realize that there's someone beyond him and that we can go beyond him. And so once again, he's very pompous and arrogant, even more so than the Merovingian. I mean, the Merovingian, he has a type of French arrogance to him. But this guy is sort of on another whole level. So the architect knows everything about creation, that is the matrix, because he made it. However, as I said, he doesn't realize that we can go beyond the matrix, that there is something beyond his entire creation. And so the architect starts the conversation.
You have many questions, and though the process has altered your consciousness, you remain irrevocably human. Ergo, some of my answers you will understand, and some of them you will not. Concurrently, while your first question may be the most pertinent, you may or may not realize it is also the most irrelevant.
Why am I here?
So as we said, even from that soundbite, the architect likes to use a lot of big words to make himself feel really important. I think we have ergo in there, and concordantly, and all these types of words, irrevocably, which is not too bad. And so he's pretentious, as we said, arrogant, pompous, another word, bombastic. So he naturally has that air about him, because he's very powerful, because he's created the matrix. So I just wanted to talk a little bit. I think you might be able to find it on YouTube, but there was an awards show, like an MTV awards show. And in that year, Will Ferrell and Justin Timberlake did like a takeoff of The Matrix and The Matrix Reloaded. And I would just say, just go and find it. And if you like The Matrix, you'll like that, just because it's funny. And Will Ferrell plays the architect. And it's just hilarious. So if you're lucky enough to check that out, check it out. So he continues on, the architect.
Your life is the sum of a remainder of an unbalanced equation inherent to the programming of the matrix. You are the eventuality of an anomaly which, despite my sincerest efforts, I have been unable to eliminate from what is otherwise a harmony of mathematical precision. While it remains a burden assiduously avoided, it is not unexpected and thus not beyond a measure of control, which has led you inexorably here.
You haven't answered my question.
So it's very interesting that really the architect is about order, in preserving order, because he's made this creation and there needs to be a type of order to it. And the oracle is about free will, about living freely within the matrix itself and then going beyond it. So we see in this conversation that he's not completely in control, because he cannot eliminate the anomaly. So he calls Neo an anomaly. He doesn't really call him Neo or anything like that. He's just an anomaly. So he doesn't have complete control. And interestingly, as we said, he doesn't answer the question that Neo has put forth. And this contrasts very strongly when Neo first asks the Oracle a question. And when Neo asks that question, she answers very sincerely and very to the point, while the architect goes about and doesn't want to answer the question. And so throughout it, the architect belittles Neo. He doesn't really see him as anything. And so he continues on.
The matrix is older than you know. I prefer counting from the emergence of one integral anomaly to the emergence of the next, in which case this is the sixth version.
Five lines before me.
There are only two possible explanations.
There were five ones before me.
Either no one told me,
or no one knows.
Precisely. As you are undoubtedly gathering, the anomaly is systemic, creating fluctuations in even the most simplistic equations.
Let me call me!
I'm going to smash you to
again!
You can't make me do anything, white.
Choice. The problem is choice.
So, once again, this is very interesting because Neo is starting to believe that the problem is choice when everything relies on choice, that choice is going to get him out of the Matrix. And so it continues on.
Which brings us at last to the moment of truth wherein the fundamental flaw is ultimately expressed and the anomaly revealed as both beginning and end. There are two doors. The door to your right leads to the source and the salvation of Zion. The door to your left leads back to the Matrix, to her, and to the end of your species. As you adequately put, the problem is choice. But we already know what you are going to do, don't we? Already I can see the chain reaction, the chemical precursors that signal the onset of an emotion designed specifically to overwhelm logic and reason. An emotion that is already blinding you from the simple and obvious truth. She is going to die, and there is nothing you can do to stop it. Hope. It is the quintessential human delusion, simultaneously the source of your greatest strength and your greatest weakness.
So the architect explains that Neo is a little bit different to the other ones. Where the ones have a general love, especially to humanity, Neo's is very specific love, and it's to Trinity. Once again, we're on the horns of the dilemma. Neo is on the horns of a dilemma. He has Trinity on one side, and it's gotten worse because the architect is basically saying that she's definitely going to die. And then we have Zion. So the architect tells Neo that he has no choice, that he does, because that's just how he understands life from his dimension. So the aspect that drives Neo, which is very, very different, is the nature of love itself. So we have to understand that Agent Smith cannot love. The architect cannot love. Merovingian has lost love. Persephone has lost love. The machines cannot love. The ego cannot love. And it is love that is the most powerful force of the cosmos. It's a force that brings beauty, harmony, and unity together. Love is the uniting force. Hatred is a force that separates. So Neo is an anomaly that the architect cannot fix because he is beyond him, because he has that love. So once again, Neo is given that choice, a huge choice, possibly a choice we've reflected over time. Does he save all of humanity, or does he save the one he loves, Trinity? So Neo and Trinity live through love. What does Neo love more, Trinity or humanity? And so we begin to understand that in the process of the path is a more internal aspect. It's not a full society thing, we could say. And the purpose of the Matrix is to know love. The purpose of life is to truly know love. Love is the glue to everything that is worthwhile. And so he's expressing that. And that this is what is giving him purpose. Love gives us purpose. So back in the Matrix, Trinity is once again falling off the building. And Neo gets to her too late and she's shot. However, Neo lays her down, and because he has powers, he picks the bullet from her body. And then, as she's, I think she's dead by now, He massages her heart and revives her. So Nia has that force of reviving people. It's a miracle. And so that force of love has saved her, just like the force of love saved Neo in the first film, because Neo had died and then she gives him a kiss and then he awoke, which relates to that love. And then in this film, he returns the favor. And I think she has a one-liner about that as well. So back on the ship, on the Nebuchadnezzar, Neo briefs the others. And he seems to believe what the architect has told him. He tells them that once the one reaches the source, the war should be over, and that now he understands that the prophecy was a lie and just a system of control, that the one was never meant to be. It was, as we said, just a system of control. And so he's lost a little bit of faith, it seems. But we have to realize that they haven't reached the source yet. My understanding is that they've got the source mixed up with the architect. So they have not reached the source yet, because the third film is about reaching the source. So they're all a bit down about things and they can't quite work out what's going on. But that's the nature of the path and they'll have to keep on fighting. So in the last couple of scenes, the Sentinels have found their ship, the Nebuchadnezzar, and they blow it up and the crew has to leave the ship. And outside the ship, they're pretty much helpless. And Neo feels a kind of difference back in reality now. And he fights off the machines and kills them with new superpowers that zaps their strength. But because of him killing those sentinels, he now lays in a coma because it's taken all of his energy. So another ship picks them all up and Neo is stabilized in the doctor's room. And then next to him is Bane, who is Agent Smith. He was also in a coma, and it seems like he has supposedly betrayed his crew. So the final scene has Neo and Agent Smith together in a coma. And that's the end of The Matrix Reloaded. The film itself actually is on a bit of a downer. So we're not quite sure what's going to happen. Our hero is completely knocked out, and we're not quite sure the nature of the purpose and what we need to do and where we need to go anymore. So interesting what will happen in the next film, Matrix Revolutions.
So does that film also have some esoteric, like does it continue with the esoteric path?
Yes, it does, Diana. So I'll be happy to dive into that film as well. I've had a quick look at it because those two films were actually shot together. We have the architect, which is the demiurge architect, and then the agnostos theos, or the god beyond, is the source itself. So the source code and the actual energy of the source itself. So that's where Neo will eventually go back to.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I really liked that point you made, the purpose of the Matrix and also of our life, which, you know, we get stuck in the Matrix. It's a symbol. Is that to know love, and that often we might think we want to save the world or save other people. Well, in this case, he does save Trinity, but, you know, he chooses love over, you know, saving, you know, Zion and creation. But,
definitely a very interesting aspect, and one that if we weren't looking at the film with a Gnostic eyes or mystical eyes, we would see that as very bizarre, and that's why the second film is a little bit more hard to understand from a normal layman's point of view, we could say, because normally the normal moralistic personality of a person would be, I'm going to save humanity and I'm being quite selfish if I just save my loved one. However, in the nature of the path, it, as we said, it's sort of an internal work. And so that aspect of love is something that we really need to understand. And there's not really a, you know, one or the other, but there's definitely that aspect that we have to understand within ourselves. So it's a very strong divergence, because usually, as I said, we're very moralistic and we would choose humanity. Like even when I watched the film the first time before I was in Gnosis, I was like, what's going on? But the nature of the path itself has that aspect of that internal nature and that nature of love, to find that love.
Mm. That's great. Thank you for explaining that. We'll take a short break and then we will finish this show with a short meditation practice.